Josh, I was talking to our listeners earlier, and many of them have said their interest has waned a little bit because it's almost being oversaturated with that. And there hasn't been like the dominant guys. And then McGregor, who was a really good fighter, but probably the best hype man they've ever seen in the UFC, was out. Is that fair? Have you noticed, do you think some people that almost too much has maybe been a detriment to the UFC?
Well, I don't know if it's too much. I think people would argue not enough McGregor.
I think too much overall UFC, sorry.
Well, I mean, potentially. Look, I think if you're a fight fan and you like mixed martial arts, and especially if you're a UFC watcher, it's hard to say that there's too much. I understand the idea of it, the request and the demand on the consumer. You know, you have to pay behind a paywall and the amount of pay-per-views. You really have to be invested as a fan of the sport mm-hmm. to want to watch, and so I get that. But look, I also think that the sport grabs people, and when a big event rolls around, most people who are saying they're not so interested are probably going to be tuning in, just based on anecdotal experience over the years.
Well, definitely McGregor has that, because you either love him or you hate him. And either way, it's good. You don't want him to be indifferent. And so some people will watch in the hopes that he loses, and many will watch in the hope that he wins. You know, you look at it, he comes in as a favorite. What makes you believe that he can lose this match?
Well, look, he hasn't won a fight in the UFC since 2016. Donald Cerrone is one of the most accomplished fighters in the history of the UFC. Can win fights in all sorts of different ways. He's a better grappler probably than McGregor, at least from a submission perspective. And welterweight is not his best weight class. I think most people, including McGregor, would say that 155 pounds is where he's his prime condition, prime size. You know, at welterweight, he's undersized. He didn't really cut weight to make the 170-pound limit today. So I think for all those reasons, you have to figure that Donald Cerrone has a shot. Also because, you know, it's been a while since we've seen Conor have success in the UFC, and there's a lot riding on his victory. A loss here could really be a detriment to him and the promotion and ESPN, quite frankly, which is in the UFC business at this point. So there's a lot riding on this fight.
Why do you think he elected to come back at this weight class and not his specialty at 155?
Well, he says that basically it's a lightweight fight without the weight cut is how he's framing it. But this is Donald Cerrone, has also had a long career at 155 pounds. And so, it makes sense. There is a movement in mixed martial arts to say, well, weight cutting is really not the healthiest mm-hmm. thing for the athletes. Perhaps we should move away from it. And so there's some of that. He's also had success at 170. The fights with Nate Diaz were big showcases for him, and they were fun fights. He won one, lost one. And there's also this idea hanging out there now that there's this BMF belt that the UFC manufactured in 2019 that George Masvidal owns, and he's a welterweight. And so I think it sort of just opens up the possibilities by fighting at this weight class. And a loss at 155, I think, would absolutely kill any hopes that he has of fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's the champion in that lightweight class. So Conor plays it smart, and so they probably looked at all the options and felt like this was the one that best suited them.
Josh Gross joins us, The Athletic's senior MMA writer. I love what you mentioned about cutting weight, because if everybody was in the same boat and you weren't allowed to cut it, or I shouldn't say cut as much, and McGregor was legitimately now just a 170 guy, and then everybody who was 155 moved up, do you think that will ever happen?
I hope so. I really do. I've been on this kind of bandwagon, maybe trying to start it myself, actually, of sort of ban weight cutting, get out of the weight cutting business. It just seems like such an antiquated practice that is really not necessary. Fighters strain themselves, really diminish themselves to try and get down. I think we're starting to see this acceptance that weight cutting can pay a physical toll over the course of a career, and also is not good in terms of just brain health. I mean, you're literally pulling the water out of your body, and that can't be good for a brain that's about to get jostled with punches and kicks. So, you know, I sure hope so. I think it's a long movement to ever get to that point. There are promoters around the world who have done taken big steps in terms of alleviating weight cutting and saying we don't really want a weight cut. They monitor fighters with hydration tests, say they have to be within a certain range. We've seen athletic commissions throughout North America take greater steps in monitoring the amount of weight the fighters are cutting. So it seems like it's trending towards a healthier, safer way of doing that. But outright, like, never weight cutting, that seems to be a bridge far, but I don't know those bridges. So sometimes you have to really try and cross them to get to a good place.
let's look at the rest of the card. You know, you've got Holly Holm and Raquel Pennington in the women's bantamweight. That's the co-main event. No, it's that's a really good matchup. Who do you like?
Well, you know, I think Holly has taken a big dip over the last couple of years, and she's not the fighter that she was when we all remember her knocking out Ronda Rousey. I think she's slipped some, and this is a rematch from a fight from 2015 that was very close. It was a split decision that went to Holm. So, you know, I think Raquel's in a little bit better form, a little bit better position to win this fight. She is definitely a scrapper, younger in her career. I think she's got a chance to win on points.
Okay. Do you think Holm is it just being in the game for so long, or why do you feel that her game has, or I guess her skill set has diminished?
Well, look, she's fighting the best of the best, so give her that. I mean, it's not like she's losing to lesser opponents. The names on that have beaten her are like fantastic. Misha Tate, Valentina Shevchenko, Jermaine Durandamy, Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes. This is the best of what you get in the women's weight classes in the world. So, you know, she is just taking a step back. I think part of it is the longevity. The last fight was the first fight she's ever been stopped. She got stopped by Amanda Nunes, so I think that's a sign that, you know, the toll of the game is catching up to her. She's 38 now. All these factors, I think, play a part.
What do you make of the Maurice Greene fight with Alexia Olenek? He's 42. He's got like 70 fights up against Maurice Greene, who's not young by any stretch, 33 years of age, but only has 11 matches on his card. Is this just based on experience a mismatch, or does the age factor totally negate that?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a mismatch. I think in mixed martial arts, you can get records that look like they're mismatches or experience gaps. And because the game is so varied and so many things can happen inside a cage, it really sort of takes away the idea that it's a mismatch. Olenek is a dangerous fighter, and he's kind of a one-trick pony. He's kind of mastered this one choke, this Ezekiel choke, that he seems to be pulling on people. And if he doesn't get it, he tends to lose the fight. And if he gets it, he tends to win. Maurice Greene, like his name, is a little less experienced, I think you'd say. He's got a funny backstory. He actually like loves crocheting. It's like one of those things that you wouldn't expect to hear about a fighter, but it's kind of like what he does for his off time. And he's a big guy, a big physical presence in the heavyweight division. I think he'll be a much bigger guy than Olenek. So if he can stay away from that choke, I think Green's got a chance to win. And I wouldn't call it a mismatch.
I love that. He's 6'7", 265 pounds, and in his spare time, he likes to crochet. Like I just looking at the size of his hands, that in itself would make it a challenge.
Right.
Of all the preliminary cards, or all the bouts on the prelim cards, is there one that you're most interested in and why?
You know, there's a couple on the ESPN portion that are really good. If you want just one, I'm going to say the Andre Fili Sadiq Youssef fight.
Okay.
This is 145 pounds. Both of them coming off really good 2019s. Both of them went 2-0 last year. I think a win here sets them up at 145 pounds to jump into that conversation among the contenders there. Andre Fili is still a relatively young guy in the UFC, very skilled. Sadiq Youssef, kind of this emerging class of African fighters that we're starting to see make a real difference in mixed martial arts. He's from Nigeria. So that's a fight to pay attention to.
Any other ones you like?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Drew Dober Nasrat Haqparast fight. I like that a lot. I think that should be exciting. The one that's kind of closing out the ESPN portion is Roxanne Modafari against Macy Barber. If you're talking about a mismatch, I don't think it's fair to call it a mismatch, but most people are going to say like Barber should win this fight. She is the hot rising prospect, undefeated, taking on Roxanne, who's been a veteran of the game for a long time, but just seems to find a way to survive. And so I think in that way, it's an interesting test for Barber. But watch her. She's very dangerous and very strong.
Josh, appreciate it. Enjoy the card tomorrow night.
Thank you.